Okay, let's continue.
Then Leo.
Leonardo.
Yes, thank you. We have four papers on the annual improvements 2011-2013 project. The first paper is agenda paper 12A. In this paper, we present a summary of the common letter analysis and interpretation committee's recommendations on the four amendments included in this project. The objective of this paper is to obtain the ISB decision on the finalization of these amendments. The first amendment clarifies that an entity in its first IFRS financial statement has the choice between applying an old standard that is still effective or applying a new one. The Interpretation Committee recommended to finalize this amendment to the basis for conclusion of IFRS 1. However, in order to not modify the original basis for conclusion of IFRS 1, the Committee recommended to add a footnote to paragraph BC 11 instead of modifying it as proposed in the disclosure draft. The proposed wording is presented in agenda paper 12B and 12C. The second amendment clarifies that the formation of all types of joint arrangements is excluded from the scope of IFRS 3, and that the scope exemption in paragraph 2 of IFRS 3 only applies in the financial statements of the joint arrangement itself. The committee recommended to finalize this amendment to IFRS 3 and to modify the basis for conclusion to clarify that the amendment should not be interpreted to mean that IFRS 3 shall be applied in the best of financial statements when the joint arrangement is established. The committee also recommended that the amendment should be applied prospectively instead of retrospectively as proposed in the AD. The proposed wording is presented in agenda paper 12B and 12C. The third amendment clarifies that the portfolio exception applies to all contracts within the scope of IAS 39 or IFRS 9, regardless of whether they meet the definition of financial assets or financial liabilities in accordance with IAS 32. The Interpretation Committee recommended that this amendment to IFRS 13 should be finalized and that it should be applied prospectively from when IFRS 13 applies, instead of retrospectively as proposed in the disclosure draft. The last amendment clarifies that the guidance in IFRS 3 and not the guidance in IAS 40 should be used to determine whether the acquisition of investment property is an acquisition of an asset or a group of assets or is a business combination. The Interpretation Committee recommended to finalize this amendment to IAS 40. It also recommended that the ISB should permit the retrospective application of this amendment if the information needed to apply this amendment retrospectively is available to the entities. We ask the board member whether they agree to finalize these amendments as described in agenda paper 12B and 12C. Thank you.
Tak.
Yes. Just about the transition, I have a chat with Michael before the meeting, and I understand, but I'm confused now. So, could you explain?
You understand, but you're confused.
Yes, I'll explain what I'm confused. So, for the transition provisions, you...
Tak, can I just clarify, this is the IAS 40 amendment you're referring
yeah,
to,
I
is
know.
That right?
Yeah. Yes. I know, this is the IAS 40 amendment, so this was... However, because this is talking about interaction between IAS 40 and IFRS 3, and in the case of IFRS 3, we have IFRS S1 and Appendix C, which allows entities to elect retrospectively, to make a retrospective amendment or not. So it's just a choice for the first-time adopter. So now, in the amendment of IAS 40, you would allow existing IFRS preparers to make a prospectively only. That's fine. But the question is, don't you think we should make a conceptual amendment to the IFRS 1 Appendix C? Because Appendix C is talking about IFRS 3. Of course, it is not talking about IAS 40. However, your amendment is related to the interaction between IAS 40 and IAS through IFRS 3. So if a company elect in the IFRS 1 to choose not do the retrospective application of IFRS 3, then the scope of IFRS 3 is same as previous gap. Then when it comes to the IS 40's amendment, after your amendment, first time adopter would be required to make a retrospective amendment. And then you have to anyway consider the IFRS 1, IFRS 3 again. So I can't understand what is the relation between the IFRS 3 Appendix C and your amendment. So that's why I'm confused.
Has Doug succeeded in confusing the staff?
I think I understand.
No,
Mary, did you want to say?
No, you do it first.
Okay, right, yes. I suppose a couple of things. One is, you know, we did look at this, and we did discuss it with the Interpretations Committee, and the conclusion was because of the relief that is already in IFRS 1 for a first-time adopter related to business combinations exemption, then that was sufficient. Also, I'd note that there's also further relief, I think, for investment properties in that you can use the fair value as deemed cost exemption for them as well. So we've already got relief. We didn't feel we needed to add any more relief. Not only that, I'd say I'd also observe that... I think I'll stop there. That's
right.
Yeah.
So may I put it this way? So for the IS 40, we have a good exemption of deemed cost already. So the first-time adopter can use the deemed cost anyway. And so when it comes to the IFRS 3, we have an election of a non-retrospective application.
Yes.
So you can choose non-retrospective. So anyway, for the first-time adopter, we don't have to care about whether it has changed or not. So is that what you want?
I hadn't thought about this question until just listening to you now, but I think the way this amendment would work, because there is no relief for a first-time adopter, once the amendment is effective, then a first-time adopter would have to apply this amendment to IFRS 3. But I think that's okay. It's not particularly burdensome for a first-time adopter, because either somebody has first time adopted already and published, or the first time they are adopting, they know what version they have to use, and you know they don't.
Yeah.
We would want them to be consistent,
right,
rather than having a transition date in the middle of the BizCom. So, so you would not want the comparative period not to apply the amendment,
right,
and the year of adoption to apply the amendment.
Mm.
So I think it's right not to give any relief to first time adopters.
But on
the IFRS 3 point.
Just for the company who is going to make a first-time adoption after this amendment.
Is effective, not just published, but is effective, because it's not immediately effective.
Yeah, but somebody
who's in process.
Yeah, and so 2 years passed.
Yeah.
2 years after this amendment is published, then suddenly that company wants to make a first-time adoption. Then if you look at the IS 40, you are saying that you have to look at the interaction between IS 40 and IFRS 3. On the other hand, if you look at IFRS 1, you don't have to make a retrospective application of IFRS 3. So that makes confusion. That is my point.
Sorry, but this amendment will be applied prospectively.
Prospectively only for the current IFRS adopter.
That's
the point. It is okay for the current IFRS adopter, but for the first time adopter, it's substantially saying you have to look back your transaction relating to IS 40 and IFRS 3. You have to make a judgment of interaction between IS 40 and IFRS 3.
A good point.
Yeah. Now I see what you're saying.
Yeah, but the recognition of assets that have been acquired via a business combination prior to data transition is governed by the business combinations exemption.
Yeah, I do understand that. However, the thing is, because Appendix C is saying that you don't have to look back the previous business combination.
But you see, I mean, you know, paragraph E of C4 in IFRS 1 says immediately after business combination, the carrying amount of the assets in accordance with previous SCAP shall be their deemed cost in accordance with IFRS.
Yeah. So I think it's more about whether or not it's a business combination. It might have been a business combination under previous SCAP, but would you have to reconsider under the revised guidance whether it's an IFRS business combination or not? Because if you had to if IFRS, as clarified, would say, no, it's an investment property, then you don't get the relief from restating, then would you no longer qualify for the IFRS 1?
But what would be the consequences for the accounting? I don't think that there would be
possibly
any.
It could not be a big deal, big issue. But the thing is, at a glance, it may confuse people. So that's why my suggestion, if you could make a small consequential amendment to the IFRS 1, paragraph C5 or something, because it talks about additional exemption to the acquisition of associates and joint ventures. So then if you could add some investment property or something, or if you could add some wording to the amendment to the IS 40, that would alleviate the confusion. Perhaps we can discuss it in the offline.
If there was any amendment, it would need to be in IFRS 1, not in IS 40.
Yeah. Consequential amendment.
We looked at this, and certainly my personal assessment is that we don't need to.
Right.
I don't think it would give. Well, I hear what you say about, it may appear to be confusing, but I think when you work through it, it wouldn't actually make a difference. For the sake of putting in a sentence, we could put in a sentence if you felt that this was potentially going to.
Let's see in the ballot process whether we need it or not.
Okay.
If we don't really need it, I don't think we should put it. But if it could help, then we could make that.
Any other questions or remarks?
One small technical ones. In the case of the prospective application, some of these amendments, applying prospectively from the beginning of the earliest period. Sometimes we are using the current period. Typical prospective method is applying all changes in the current period, not going back to the earliest period of a comparative statement. So I don't know why you are suggesting such a kind of a prospective application.
We are proposing this such a kind of prospective application only to the amendment to IFRS 13. Because the intention is use this amendment starting from you apply IFRS 13.
Uh-huh.
This is the reason.
Because that's a new standard, IFRS 13.
Yes, because
that starts this year?
Yes, and I think IFRS 13 was not retrospective to comparative periods, correct? We do not require in 13 to restate the earliest comparative periods.
Yes, it's prospective.
So that is consistent, because if you don't restate under 13, you cannot under this amendment.
So because we are not changing the current IS 39, and so it's just to be.
Ask a quick question on paragraph 32, where you say you can use prospective if and only if you've got the information. Why is it so adamant on that? Do we normally have retrospective without information? It's not a major point, but I didn't quite understand why you had to write that in.
We are confirming the prospective application, and only because this is this amendment is only a clarification, let's say, if you have all the information.
And I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just asking about the second sentence.
Yes, because we are saying only if you have all the information to avoid the use of hindsight. For this reason, we are also asking.
So we're saying that people can apply it retrospectively, but only if they've got the information that enables them to do that.
But could they do it if they haven't got the information?
They shouldn't.
You're trying to limit somebody. This is not the right thing, but for example, from using hindsight. So you're trying to, you don't want somebody using it, going retrospectively and taking advantage of an arbitrage opportunity to restate things. So you're just trying to make sure that they have everything before they do it.
That's right. This is the intention. This is exactly the intention.
Does the quiet mean that we agree with all the staff recommendations?
I have one regarding these amendments to IFRS 1, which is in paper 12C. When you're reading that, I was at least confused because it starts with then paragraph 7 to 8 of the IFRS requires the first time adopter to apply the current version. Then the footnote is saying the paragraph does not require the entity to use a more recent version. Then in 11CA it is a new version, so I'm really confused what we are talking here. Because is the current really the old version, or is it already the new? So I think we have to clarify this wording, what we are really talking about.
Okay. The standard's clear.
The standard's clear.
So otherwise, don't you agree with the staff recommendations?
Yes.
But we can agree.
Can I just say something? Leonardo, just as an observation, not anything which is slightly different from other papers that I'm used to reading it. In your papers, you are saying that, like, for example, paper 11, paragraph 11 under 12A, some respondents think the IHP should not amend the basis of conclusion. You do not talk about what is the majority talking about, and you are only focusing on some. And when I read the next sentence, I feel like IHP is, the IFRIC, the IHP is overruling them, but it's not giving me the balance why we are overruling it, because it's only focusing on those minority people, which is not the usual style we see in other papers. So I thought I should bring it to your notice that this is a different style from other papers, and maybe we should give a balance. Yeah?
Thank you. Then paper 12B, I presume?
That's the due process paper. Yes. The objective of agenda paper 12B is to demonstrate compliance with due process steps that we have taken since the publication of the disclosure draft. We think that all the four amendments meet the criteria given in the due process handbook for annual improvements. Our assessment is in Appendix A of this paper. We also think that the amendments should be finalized without re-exposure, because in our view, we are not changing the amendment significantly. We recommend changing the effective date of the amendments to 1st July 2014, because we are planning to publish the final amendment in Q4 of 2013. Finally, we think that we have met all the due process requirements to date. The confirmation of the due process steps followed is in Appendix B of the paper. We ask the board members whether they agree with our conclusion and recommendation, and if you can start drafting the ballot of the final standard.
Just one question. I do agree with staff recommendation, but what about the annual improvement of 2010 and 12? Are you going to do the same procedure?
Yes. So the other cycle, which Denise is going to bring you a sweep issue on in just a moment, we will, once that will be the last item for discussion on that cycle, and then next month we will bring a paper which covers the due process for that cycle. It's just Leo's one only had four, very fast, four issues, so we've overtaken the other one. But what we'll do is we'll actually finalise all of these together in one amendment, one, you know, one, yeah, publication, to sort of just ease, you know, the administrative burden on everybody.
Literally, it's beat in Mexico.
Germany. Okay.
So we agree with the staff recommendation.
So that moves on to Denise's
Denise.
Okay, well, agenda paper.